Hi, I'm Carl Brooks from SearchCloudComputing.com, and welcome back to part two of our Cloud Roundtable with Novell, Forrester Research, ACS, and Paragon Development Systems. Thanks for listening, and be sure to catch parts three and four. Okay, so let's now move on to some of the sticky areas here, especially when it comes to definitions and when it comes to defining what an enterprise can expect or should expect from a private cloud or from cloud services that don't come from outside. I think it's fair to say that in the industry that most people now roughly adhere to the definitions put out by the National Institute on Standards Technology for Cloud, briefly that it be elastic provisioning of IT resources, that it be scalable, that it be self-service, and that it be metered in some way by a very small increment. Clearly, some of these things are not fully applicable within an enterprise IT organization. No IT organization has an infinite amount of compute resources. Neither does any service provider, but a service provider can do a lot better job of looking like an infinite resource. So you can go to the public cloud and you can get all of these things from, say, Amazon. When you come inside to a private cloud, do you put limits on these things and say, this is elastic and scalable, but don't launch more than five servers, Bob? Or this is metered, but you need approval from a higher up before you can start get going. Let's talk about some of those issues about what's different between the interaction with a private cloud from a user perspective or from a management perspective and the interaction with a public cloud. And for this, I think let's kick off with Rich Fischera from Forrester on this topic. What should you look at differently when thinking about consuming public versus private resources?
Well, I think you pretty much nailed it. A private cloud is a business resource, and as such, you have to treat it like a business resource and build some policies around it. All of the scenarios that you posited are possible and likely. It's highly likely, for example, that early implementations of an internal cloud aren't going to be every user in the world or every user in the business able to dial up and stand up a virtual server. It may be a self-service portal that's accessed by the IT group based on requests from the users. Certainly, there will be some policy limits on the number and types of servers that a given organizational entity, be it a person or a group, can put up. And certainly, there's going to be chargeback and limits on resources. Otherwise, it's not a rational business environment. There may be, for example, you may have an environment where to encourage use of this shared resource, you may have a policy that says everybody's entitled to one minimal basic virtual server, and then you start limiting the heavyweight servers. So I think all of those scenarios will happen, and it's entirely going to be a function of how the organization wants to structure it. Now, that has some implications for people that build tools for this environment, is they better be capable of handling any one of these scenarios that the business user wants to impose. So I think, primary requirement for a private cloud management tool is that it adapt to the organization. So it's got to be very flexible in terms of roles, privileges, allocations, and billing.
This is William Gordon. I'd like to respond to that. I believe while you need some standardization, when you're talking about the enterprise-level client, you can't really put too many limits around what they can and cannot do. What you want to do is give them options. Now, you can go ahead and tier that, and then that's going to cause some complexities as you begin to offer more and more options for provisioning with your build-back capabilities. But, in fact, I think that's going to be one of the challenges as these solutions are built is the whole build-back piece.
Does that seem valid, Rich Fischera, to put a fence around them but let them roam free, as it were?
I think that with some limitations, yes, but I guess I have to come down that we have a fundament. We probably have to agree that we have a disagreement on how much control IT is going to be able to exert. I think that some level of tiering and some level of control is inevitable, especially in the early stages of these kind of private cloud projects. because it's really unknown territory. You know, we as an industry, a given company, as an individual entity, really doesn't understand what behavioral changes are going to happen when we start turning people loose with this. So my impression talking to clients in my daily life is that people are going to be cautious about how they implement this, and it's going to be with tiered offerings and with some level of control. I think we have to agree to have a little difference of perspective on this. But quite honestly, at this early stage of a technology as transformational as this, if you had a panel of supposed experts who all had the same opinion, you can pretty much count that they're all wrong.
That's a good way to put it.
Carl, this is Ben. Do you mind if I jump in on that question?
Actually, I wanted to turn to Austin Park quickly before, and then I'd love to hear from you, Ben. Austin, on this question, this is pretty fundamental difference here. You go to Amazon and you get what's offered, be you an enterprise or a single person, you pick and choose from what they have. Delivering cloud to people inside the enterprise, how do you deal with this question of choices or, you know, wishing to have options in the way it's delivered?
Sure. You know, and I, from an integration perspective, since we have to deal with a lot of the issues that pop up here, I tend to agree with Rich a little bit that as we build out the private clouds, I think the emphasis has to be put on IT to build out the service catalogs in a way that allows you to provide some control. And you can actually shift the perception of control to the end users by allowing them to choose freely from these predefined service catalogs. But in terms of the security, the rights, the amount of capacity you're going to offer them, that does need to have control within the service catalog that you make available to them. I mean, and the other thing is, just going back to your original point of kind of this cyclical trend in terms of, for instance, mainframes and timeshare and capacity on demand that you can get on mainframes, I think the difference between that and private cloud is the notion of encapsulation and mobility of these workloads. And I know that William Golden from ACS touched on this, the virtualization being key. But the key here is that these workloads are mobile, so that if we can create a control mechanism through a defined service catalog that we as an organization determine what is of value and what are the tiers of services we're going to offer, we can, in essence, use that architecture we've built out for private cloud for all of our business users to get used to requesting services that way. And then in the back end, we can use mechanisms to federate with other capacity. Now, the whole notion of what's internal and external is changing, because today we have the ability to extend layer 2 out over layer 3 connections. So we can, in essence, extend the boundaries of our firewall. So it may be possible in the future for our data centers to be completely virtual and for us to reshape what capacity is considered internally. So I think this is an approach for a lot of people in long-term strategy, that if they build out this private cloud and they focus their efforts in building in those control mechanisms that they want, as far as the capacity goes, that will become elastic, because they'll be able to leverage the best of, and leverage up to the total capacity that they have internally, and then hopefully seamlessly federate in other capacity, whether it's from the true public cloud or prearranged capacity that they would temporarily take over.
Great. Thanks very much. All right. Ben from Novell on limits on users.
Yeah, I did, without losing the current point, I wanted to jump back to something Mr. Gordon said. He brought up the point of billback. We've talked about how to fence users, or whether it's necessary to fence users. And I think it's interesting, because it's such a common discussion within traditional IT management of how do you sort of keep the users from misbehaving? How do you get them not to flood your infrastructure? How do you get them to behave the way IT would want them to behave? And the interesting thing is the business is generally pretty capable of acting in a rational and responsible way if you give them the right incentives and the right visibility. And what's been slowly eroding pretty much since the mainframe days, as we move to commodity systems, is that visibility and that sort of that gateway to say, here's how much it's going to cost you if you want to do this. And it's exactly that kind of business justification, that the economic business case for doing a thing, that becomes more and more abstract the farther away you get from sort of having this single pool of resource. Mm-hmm. Right? And as we moved into commodity systems and now into virtualization, it seems to be instantaneous to get a new virtual machine. It appears to be free for all intents and purposes from the person requesting it. It's very difficult to nail down what is that resource actually costing to run or to operate, and therefore how would you price it back to the business? So of course the business can't make a good decision. And I think it's critical to think of that fence, that need to control the users, as being one that you don't need to do directly, but I think you really need to do indirectly. And you give the decision-making power back to the business by empowering them with things like cost visibility. To say, this is what it's going to cost to do thing X versus thing Y, right? The dollar menu of IT management, right? If you want this, it's going to cost you that. If you want to add this to it, it's going to cost you something else. Then all of a sudden, you start not needing to put strict controls on people because they already have that. It's called their budget. And that's really part of this big shift that's going on back into, you know, how do we make IT management work in such a way that the business can use it effectively to find that interface between IT and the business?
That makes sense. William Gordon, so let your users roam free, but, you know, a virtual server still costs something to the business, doesn't it? You've got to keep some checks and balances on what goes on.
Absolutely, that's right. And so at the end of the day, you need to understand what your customer needs and requirements are, and you need to be able to gauge that and plan that out, or you're, you know, because as we discussed earlier, it's that it's knowing what capacity is going to be in those machines and how that the volatility of that looks like. You've got to be able to understand your cost structure, your price structure, and match those up. And if you don't have a good understanding of your business and your client's business, you're going to very quickly get on the wrong side of those deals.
Makes sense. I'll share a quick anecdote. I was talking to a private cloud builder, a user, just last week, and he said to me that his lead developer came to him and said, well, I've got this thing on Amazon. I've been playing around with it. It looks pretty great, but it's on my credit card. Can we get that over to the business account? And the CIO said to him, let's just see what you've got going here before we think about doing that. Because they had started the project personally and had gotten to the point where it swelled past this man's personal expenses, and the CIO was afraid that the same thing would happen on the business expense. There's a real risk if there's no governance on what you can spend or how you spend it. Isn't that true?
That is absolutely true, and I go back to role-based provisioning just being essential, and then all of the the management parameters you put around that. You need to know what you're spending, what it's being spent for, and being able to manage that almost real time.